the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, and we are in the middle of July. Fantastic. Great time of year, summer. Woo. And we've got a good show for you today. For our question, I'm going to be talking to Candace about the concept of pulling a Ruth long distance, which Ruth didn't do because back then they didn't have online dating. So she had to actually go and find Boaz and do it. But apparently now you can do it if you're in online relationships or who knows what else. So Candace is going to weigh in on that. And then our culture segment today is actually with Zach Hunter, who many of you know of him. He, at the age of 12, started an organization to combat modern day slavery. So I, quite frankly, can't remember what I was doing at 12, but I'm pretty sure it did not involve anything useful. Let's just be honest. So Zach is a great guy. We're going to be talking to him. He's already written 3 books and really is going to talk a lot about finding the passion that God has given you for whatever that is and then going out there, whatever your age, and using it. So, but for our roundtable, I actually have 3 fun guests with me. I have the, I guess it's kind of the marriage and family / boundless intern crew here with me. I've got Chelsea, Caitlin, and Amanda. Welcome to all of you.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. Great to have you. So it's really fun to talk to you guys because we were just talking a little bit before we started taping here about your experience with Boundless. And it's actually pretty new for most of you. In fact, I think, Caitlin, you were the only one who really knew anything about Boundless prior to coming to Focus.
Right.
Which is, again, for us, a marketing heads up. I always look out into the other room at Mott and them when I say stuff like that. So, because I think people need to know about Boundless. I think what we're doing is great, and it's totally pretty much unprecedented in the church today. But we thought we would just put you guys on the spot and say, you know, okay, so now you're in the fray. You know, you have met Steve, you've met Mott. You kind of have to work over there and get acquainted with Boundless. You all knew about Focus on the Family.
Right.
Yes. Yeah,
definitely.
Okay. So you were kind of like, hey, we'll come and do these internships. And then you get stuck in what you thought was marriage. And then they did the bait and switch on you, and they're like, oh, you're like young, you're in college, let's talk about Boundless. And there you are. So
they tricked us.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about like your first impressions. Like when they said Boundless, what did you think you were going to be hearing as far as what Boundless is at Focus on the Family?
I had never even heard of it before until the day I walked in for the first day of my internship. So I saw the big like Boundless poster in the little cubicle corner and thought it was a book or something. So
okay.
I had never heard of it.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess, well, I heard of Boundless back in February at a collegiate conference at Southern Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. And when I heard about Boundless, I don't really know what I thought. It was kind of like I heard about it through a session that Steve and Candace led. And so, I don't know. I thought it was cool. I thought like, oh, they have something for singles? Like, I didn't even know that. So, yeah, it's awesome.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was neat to find something like that at Focused on the Family, which is focused on singles, because it's like, oh, I'm single. I don't have a family. Focused on the Family might just not have anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's Boundless, and they've got all these great articles. And still have something
helpful
to say to my life
stuff.
Yeah, resources. So okay, so being in college, and obviously, you know, it's not like you're 14 or something, so y'all are single and you're, you know, moving kind of through these stages of life that Boundless addresses. What really was your context for understanding that? Like, what did you have? And I'm not, you know, here to say like, now that Boundless has transformed your life, but I mean, prior to knowing Boundless, really, what was your context for understanding relationships and understanding like, you know, career and faith and worldview and that kind of stuff? What did you get from the church or from school or whatever?
Really not a whole lot. I kind of feel like it's an ignored stage of life. Like churches have really good youth groups, and where I'm from, it's really small. So like they'll have a youth group or like a children's ministry, and then maybe like a adult where it's like all the moms and stuff. So like that age group is really ignored. So it was really exciting to like come across a resource like this that really address right where I'm at right now. Like in college, almost leaving college, like our stage of life, our relationship status, and just really relevant things that we're dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I my college group, like we have a pretty big college group, but we don't focus on a lot of stuff about relationships. Most of it, I mean, it's great. You know, we go through the Bible, we go through different books. Every series is like we work our way through a different book in scripture. But relationships is kind of the like taboo subject. You don't really talk about it. Although a lot of people in my college group are like hooking up and getting engaged. So it's kind of weird. My experience with like my own development as far as knowing what to think about relationships and stuff is kind of like a personal, you know, mm-hmm. just, I love Elizabeth Elliot. She's been a really big influence in my life. So, mm-hmm.
So yeah. Now have you seen people getting engaged and you're kind of like, how did this happen? Like, did they just kind of like stumble upon this, or do you see it actually happening intentionally in what you would say is like a healthy way?
I'd say it's pretty healthy for the most part. But it hasn't been through the influence of like our college pastor or anything really. I mean, not that they've neglected it. It's just, it just seems like personal choices. People have said, this is the way we want to do things. This is the biblical way to do it. And so they've mm-hmm. walked it out from searching on their own time or, you know, that kind of a thing. So,
okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. the whole intentional dating thing is actually really new for me. Mm-hmm. Like, my school, it's kind of like, it's really small. And it's a Christian college, so everyone is, like, looking for their soulmate. And they have 4 years to find them. Uh-huh. And, yeah, people, like, start dating just for fun and to date. A lot of times not with the intention of marriage, and it can lead to that, but I think it's really great to have these resources, and I've learned a lot in the past couple weeks, just like what you can do to prepare yourself for that. And even if you don't have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, like what you can be doing to embracing the time of singleness and to prepare yourself to be in a relationship as well.
Mm-hmm. It's great to see how the biblical worldview plays out in your day-to-day life. It's more than just politics the way we get taught. I mean, my school's got this intensive worldview curriculum, but it's, okay, what's your opinion on these issues based on worldview? But that actually applies to how you live out every day, and it's neat to see on the blog, like, this is how you, as a Christian with a biblical worldview, live out your day.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've heard that a lot, actually, from students who come through our institute, for example, because they, I think they feel like they're, especially their Christian colleges, are giving them a good context for understanding, you know, life in the public square or issue-related stuff like abortion, gay marriage, stuff like that, how to address that, how to share their faith. But then the whole idea of marriage and family, what is the biblical worldview on that? What's the context for that? And a lot of them just think, you know, well, I guess you're supposed to be a Christian and marry someone. I don't know. And they don't understand that, you know, I was reminded again recently that, you know, the Bible begins with marriage and it ends with marriage. And that whole concept of how that plays out on a macro level as well as in our individual lives is pretty, pretty cool. So did you guys have any references? Like, for example, did y'all have to read, like, Josh Harris's book growing up? You mentioned Elizabeth Elliot, Caitlin.
Yeah.
Were there books out there that people, or the ones that, I mean, obviously, you know, did your church group go through He's Just Not That Into You?
Why not? You know. We actually had discussion questions on that movie.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No, we didn't.
Nice. So. I mean, do you find like the, here's maybe another way of asking it. What are the differences of opinions that you've seen maybe between men and women, like within the context of dating or moving towards marriage and stuff? Is it more of like a lackadaisical attitude, or do you see kind of like really guys that you know stepping up and saying, hey, I want to get married and this is how I'm going to get it done? Or
not really.
No. I feel like from what I've seen, a lot of Christians that I know that are my age are still letting kind of the world standard govern how they date and pursue relationships. And so just
meaning
even
what? Like, what does that look like?
Well, like just talking with my friends and just their what they think is important in finding a husband, you know, or even guys, you know, that I talk to, not really being conscious of guarding their sisters' hearts, you know, and just kind of responding to their emotions and what they're feeling instead of letting scripture guide them. And, you know, that kind of a thing. It's just very much, it's not based on what the word says. It's not putting others before yourselves. It's kind of a self-seeking mm-hmm. Idea. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's realized. I don't think they intentionally are like, oh, I'm being really selfish right now because I'm leading my sister in Christ on. It's just kind of like, this makes me feel good, so I'm going to do it.
And I think there's a lot of that, too. We were talking about that this morning a bit about, like, settling. Like, since we don't have the biblical standards and we don't have it, like, in our heads what we want and what we could have and what we need to honor Christ in a relationship and a marriage, we end up settling for something that isn't best for us or the other person. It's just, like, dating and a worldly view of it.
Yeah.
And on the other side of the spectrum, like, in circles where you get inundated with this material on biblical dating, there's people who are paralyzed by fear, like, I'm going to do this the wrong way. I don't even want to try. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just been really encouraging to read some of the articles that are like, you know, this is something that God has for you and that you can have, and yeah, go out there and mm-hmm. and try it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what you guys said about the kind of the consumer mentality is something I've seen play out a lot. And that's kind of the, you know, well, I know I want to get married and I feel like or think it should look this way. And so what do I need and what do I, you know, want? How is this going to improve my life or ultimately mm-hmm. move me where I want to be and stuff? And to think of it, you know, as a sanctifying process and ultimately a sanctifying institution and one that, you know, you're really laying your life down for the other person. It's probably a shift for a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
I would say. Okay. So, kind of in looking at that, then what have been some of the, have there been anything, now as you guys have been sifting around on the site, anything that you've been like, oh,
I think we'd all have to agree that the, biblical guideline.
Guide to biblical dating.
Yeah, that. Yeah. We talked a lot about that. And, like, not that we disagree with all of it, but it's just been really interesting to read it and discuss it. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, there's some tough love there.
Yeah.
You mean the Scott Croft stuff? So, yeah. Like, the approaching the father and the
yeah, like, the whole courting concept.
Some of it's kind of just not applicable to everyone, you mm-hmm. know? And so I think people would look at that and say, well, I can't do that, so I'm not dating biblically. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of depending on the person and the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. The do you feel like it kind of you know, makes women appear a little bit too much like the wilting flowers, or a little bit like stand back and like my dad has to do XYZ before I can even talk to you? Or
I don't think so.
No.
I think it's kind of honoring towards women in a way, you mm-hmm. know, because it shows some respect towards mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. that's not really present otherwise.
Yeah.
So
I know when I first read that and I heard Scott Croft speak, I was really blown away by the concept of really it is the man's responsibility to take the risk. And mm-hmm. I'd never seen that before, because in the most of the contexts I'd seen, the women were out there kind of putting their hearts on the line and kind right. of saying yeah. what they felt. Yeah. And, you know, I'm shockingly quite a verbose person. And I find myself, you know, all of a sudden I'm just like talking and like creating these essays, you know, for guys. And I'm sure they're just like ready to go under the table or whatever, but I thought that was helpful just to say, you know what, guys, you're called to risk and put your cards on the table and put it out there, and she doesn't have to be, you know, she can just be responsible for saying yes or no in that, and don't ask her to give more than she needs to give, I guess, in that context. So did any of y'all read the home ownership article? That's another one that blazes people away, from Candace, about women owning homes.
Yeah,
that's kind of along that same vein of, we've gotten a lot of feedback on that. Just, you know, should women go out and purchase a home and do XYZ? And it kind of can let women make marriage their plan B, you know, and just, I don't know,
right.
the protection that's provided within your parents' home and stuff like that. Of course, when you're me and your parents live in a town of 122 people,
yes.
You can't live with them. So
right.
you have to eventually.
You could, but you could like farm with them. Like that
right.
would be my option.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. Go to the.
Which
yeah.
isn't so bad.
Exactly. I could work one of the tractor pulls or something like yeah. that. You know, be uh-huh. part of that. So, but.
Yeah. Amanda and I were kind of talking about that this morning a little bit, just living with the parents and how that. That doesn't really happen now. Most girls after high school, they go on to college mm-hmm. or they move out and they get a job and then they get married and, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever the situation mm-hmm. is. And, yeah, we were talking about that and how it would be cool, you know, looking back, I kind of wish I had stayed with my parents. It would be a cool transition to go from family to like a new family, starting my own.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
like you, my parents come from a town that's just so small. mm-hmm. There's nothing there. I mean, the closest, like, city is like 100 miles or something, so
yeah,
you know, it's kind of difficult.
Well, and even with Christian parents, I think there's often just a misunderstanding or almost a cluelessness of really what it looks like to date biblically in our culture, mm-hmm. in our context. Like, my parents were just like, honestly, is it really this difficult? Like, they didn't understand why right. I was having all this trouble. And I don't think that they were, I mean, I think more parents and more church communities need to step up and say, okay, we're going to take on this role, we're going to take on this responsibility and shepherd, especially the single women, like, within our congregation through this process and help protect them. Because my parents were just like, oh my word, like what is the problem? Like and then everyone just figures, well, I guess Lisa just wants to be single because she's just over, you know, whatever.
Or so. Everyone's trying to set you up with like the single cousin's brother that's like single for a reason.
Or the waiter at the restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you single?
Exactly. Yeah.
I have a niece.
kind of that. I think I heard he was a Christian. At least he's from Texas. I'm not sure. You know, it's just all this very like wishy-washy stuff.
He has a good job.
You have to like ferret out everything about them. Yeah, that's totally true. So, well, cool. So any like anything specific that you think you're really going to take back with you when you leave Focus and head back to school and ultimately into life? Any changes or perceptions?
I've just been blown away by the idea that marriage isn't an end in and of itself, that you are glorifying God and that's the end and that's the purpose, is just bringing glory to God. And it puts such a new lens on things. Like, mm-hmm. you can respect the person you're with so much more knowing that what's best for them is that they're pursuing God's will in their life. And it changes almost everything for me.
Mm-hmm. I think it made me more excited about dating and marriage eventually, because there's so much more to it than just like finding someone to share your life with. Like, you're sharing your life in Christ and ultimately going out to serve him together. And I think that's really exciting. You don't mm-hmm. have to do it by yourself and mm-hmm. have a partner.
Yeah, I've learned a lot about just what it looks like to have a successful marriage. My parents have been, actually this year is their 25th anniversary, and they've been a really good model of just the love and respect aspect of like, you know, husbands love your wives and wives respect your husbands. But it's been really cool to actually have some like hands-on, like this is what that looks like. This is how you can live this out as you're approaching that season of your life. Towards marriage. And so it's created a like desire in me to have something like that.
Yeah.
And to actually know that it's tangible and that it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Can keep us from settling.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, and I think you guys can vouch for the fact that even though we preach a lot, we're still kind of fun, right? Like at Boundless.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, of course. So,
we're not just fuddy-duddies. Well, no, at least way. I'm not. You know, the guys, whatever. Sometimes they get a little sketch. But
that's kind of
we're working on
them.
Keeping them.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Keeping them real. Getting Lecrae in here and talking to other people so that we can be somewhat normal. So, well, awesome. We'll go back and spread the word about Boundless. Mm-hmm. Tell your friends. And I know I've tried to do that a lot, feeling like I kind of came out of my 20s into, you know, what I felt was at that point a vast wasteland. And I had, you know, I've talked about it on the show, really focused on my career and did a bunch of other stuff, and then realized, wow, how did I wake up one day and I was 30 and I still wasn't married, and I had always thought I wanted to be. And so for me, it was really life changing when I came in contact with the Boundless message and realized, wow, this whole marriage process is intentional and it is biblical, and it is something that we should not be ashamed to desire and not have it be some kind of, you know, third or fourth option if God doesn't like have us be a missionary or just something amazing, you know, whatever, you know, if it's just, well, you know, I can't use you enough, so just go and get married instead, whatever. So
it's kind of seen that way now as like a shameful, like, oh, you shouldn't, we were talking about that this morning too, like you shouldn't desire to be married, you shouldn't desire to have a family, that should be like the afterthought or the what you can't do if you can't actually make it in the real world, you know.
You're a silly girl if that's what you want.
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah. Like, it's totally substandard, especially, you know, if you went to college and if you have all this talent and stuff, why are you doing this?
Right.
So it's true. We have to dispel it, y'all. So, well, thank you guys so much, Chelsea, Caitlin, and Amanda, for joining us and providing a fresh perspective. It's always fun when we can bring people in who are kind of living in the fray instead of just those of us that are like, also living in the fray. We've been living in it a lot longer. So anyway, great to have you guys, and we want to stay in touch with you all. We'll see you back here at some point.
Awesome. Yes.
Thank you so much. God, you alone have created the heavens and earth with your voice. You rule and you reign without ending, your sovereignty crowning my soul. Father, you see the whole picture with lenses of pure clarity. Father, your hand is guiding me. High above all, exalted one. High above all, to you I come. Your greatness displayed for all to
Hey everyone, we have got another culture segment here ready to go. I am in studio with Zach Hunter. Zach, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It is great to have you. Zach is a little bit younger than I am, and but I'm not going to be. I'm going to say you're maybe like 2 years younger than I am, right? Because you're 19 now.
Yeah, I'm 18.
Oh, you're 18.
Yeah.
Okay, so whoa. Okay, 18 years old, and here he is on the Boundless Show, you guys. So this is good. We don't often have like super young young adults on the show, so that's great. But we're excited to have you because for those of you who don't know, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard of Zach in the past, Zach actually started a group, basically, or an organization called Loose Change to Loosen Chains.
Very good.
And and since then, or in the process of this, has also written 3 books. So some of you, I'm sure, have read these. He wrote Be the Change, Generation Change, and Lose Your Cool. Mm-hmm. All of those from Zondervan. So now we have talked to guys here before like Alex and Brett Harris. So we've talked to other change agents and especially folks who are young and who are like, you know what? We are a generation that needs to step up to the plate and we need to get some things done.
Yeah.
Which is awesome because that is what Boundless is about. We're like, people, stop just dinking around and waiting for all the, you know, older people to just do stuff. Everything from share the gospel to, you know, help social justice issues to helping your neighbor and who knows what else. So you are an example of someone who has done that beginning at the age of 12, right?
Yeah.
So that would have had you out of our Boundless demographic and you were already doing stuff.
That was a while ago, yeah.
Yeah. So because we haven't had you on the show before, Zach, you need to give us just kind of a bird's eye view of really how all this came about. I'm sure you have to say this all the time, but just kind of give our listeners an idea of really where your passion for the injustice of human slavery came and how you even found out about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Well, when I was 12, I was in seventh grade. And it was Black History Month. I was learning about slavery in the history of America. And basically, in my mind, slavery is literally the single most embarrassing thing to happen in American history, you know? Mm-hmm. And to see that people of my race thought it was okay to own other human beings because of the color of their skin was just ridiculous. It was outrageous to me, you know? And I thought to myself, if I had lived back then, you know, I would have done something. That wouldn't have been going on. And I was 12, you know, what would I have actually done? And then I found out that there are more than 27 million people actually enslaved around the world today. And I thought, hey, I can actually do something with my life. You know, I actually have a purpose. I can, you know, this didn't end with the Emancipation Proclamation. Mm-hmm. And even then, there's still slavery going on in America. So I decided, yeah, there has to be something I can do. So I started raising money, started raising awareness just in my school. I was terrified of public speaking, something not a lot of people know, but I talk about it in Be the Change, my first book, is the fact that I had an anxiety disorder when I was younger. So for God to choose someone who, you know, was deathly afraid of, you know, even going outside when I was younger than 12 to speak in front of thousands of people is really ironic. But God chooses the most unlikely, ironic people to do things, you know. That's just how he works. It's his sense of humor, I think.
Yeah.
And no, but it's been incredible. After Loose Change, Loosen Chains, I had the privilege of after I founded that when I was 12, I had the privilege of speaking around the country about the film Amazing Grace and talking about William Wilberforce and the correlation between worship and justice. You can't how you can't have praise without protest. And through all of that speaking, that summer I basically got a book contract with U Specialties and wrote Be the Change. That's kind of how a lot of this started.
Wow. So, okay, so you're 12 years old, and even now at 18, I mean, basically you're like going up to people and, you know, when you first started out and you're like, so anyway, you know, if you have some change, I mean, really, what was the reaction initially? Was it kind of like, oh, that's so cute that you have this whole project?
I don't know. You know, I had some really amazingly supportive adults around me at the very beginning. First of all, my parents were incredibly supportive after they got kind of over the initial shock and humor of, you know, their 12-year-old son wanting to change the world.
Yeah.
They, you know, they kind of jumped on board and were super supportive and still are, you know, my greatest support structure that I have. But my principal of the school that I was going to just got behind Loose Change to Loosen Chains at the very beginning. And basically it was a really, really organized campaign. It was completely student-led, but logistically it was really sound, really tight. And basically we sent people home with yellow stadium cups with the logo of the campaign on them. and said, go get your change and bring it in. And we actually had a competition between the grades at the school. Hmm. And the interesting thing is that the youngest kids were the ones who raised the most money.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Okay. So as the money is raised, what is actually happening with it? What kind of, you know, now 6 years in, mm-hmm. what kind of impact have you seen with what you and others have done?
Yeah. The money goes to, goes directly to one of five or one of six now, I think, nonprofit organizations that actually physically free people from slavery around the world. None of the money comes to me. I don't see it, which is why it's also difficult to know exactly how much is being raised, although there's a rough estimate on that. But basically, the money goes to pay for investigators, some of the best in the world, you know, ex-CIA, FBI, et cetera, who actually go in and document the cases with top-secret undercover equipment, because slavery is illegal everywhere, but it's tolerated a lot of the time. So they document the cases, get the local police, raid the place, arrest the perpetrators, get the people who are enslaved out. And the money also pays for lawyers, also some of the best, who work for almost nothing, to prosecute the perpetrators, get them put behind bars. And money also pays for rehabilitation so that once the kids or the people who are coming out of slavery get out, they can start their lives over.
Wow. You know, it was a while back now I interviewed Representative Linda Smith here on the show about specifically human trafficking and what she learned over in Nepal and beyond with girls in sex slavery. And she really opened my eyes to the fact that this is actually going on in the U.S. as well.
Yeah.
And what is happening at truck stops and beyond. And of course, we have Sarah Grove's song that she wrote about that whole experience and her experience with International Justice Mission and all that. So I think it's now coming to the forefront. In fact, here at Focus, we actually have a group called Rising Voice that has addressed trafficking as one of their key issues as well. So that's really cool. I know that you have looked to Wilberforce's story really as a personal inspiration. And I know when I saw the movie, I was just amazed at how year after year after year went by. And not only could he not move the laws, but he couldn't even move the hearts of some of his fellow men. And you know, what do you do to guard against discouragement when you look at a number that's in the multi-millions and you think, wow, you know, in my lifetime, what can even be touched related to this? What do you do as far as just whether, you know, you're grappling with it with the Lord or just practically speaking to overcome discouragement?
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting because one of the foremost voices on the issue of abolition estimates that it'll take, I believe, $11 billion If you're just using monetary means, if you can give, you know, a monetary value to abolishing slavery, it would take about $11 billion. The interesting thing is that there's more than $10.5 billion in loose change in American households alone. You know, that's just in America. That's just our loose change that we have sitting in our houses. So if you look at that, I mean, I think it's definitely plausible, even just from, you know, a monetary aspect. It's super easy. And that's just one of the many issues, obviously. But I more get discouraged as it relates to myself, you know. But I mean, that's something that I have to work through. And I think, you know, it's part of God's way of keeping me humble. So
you mean as far as yourself, meaning what?
Oh, just self-esteem.
Oh, okay.
You know, and people think that, you know, speakers or people who they perceive as being celebrities or authors or whatever wouldn't deal with things like that. But I'm one of the most average people I know, you know, but still the worst of sinners. So, I mean, I definitely struggle with that. And I think self-consciousness is actually a sin because you're focusing on yourself more than you're focusing on other people. So that's something I definitely have to deal with. But even more so than discouragement over the issue, because I think that's definitely necessary. It's just being concerned over whether or not I'm qualified, which I know I'm not. You know, nobody's qualified for ministry.
Sure.
Everyone has things that would disqualify them.
So you are one of these guys, though, who when most people listen to you, they're just like, man, I wish I was doing that when I was 18, you know, or I wish I was doing that now that I'm 30, you know, or whatever. And I think it is great that you have put legs to what was originally a passion of yours and really a conviction of yours when you learned the facts and realized what the issue was and what the problem was. What would be your encouragement? Because there are a lot of young adults out there who get fired up about stuff. And I know I've maybe referred in the past to a talk that I heard Bill Hybels give on what he refers to as a holy discontent. And we all have something like that, something that when we hear of it, we're just like, oh, you know, I need to be a part of that. I need to be a part of change. What's been your experience in talking to other young adults about just their passion for seeing the glory of God manifest in a particular situation, and how do you encourage them?
I would definitely say that I'm not an anomaly. You know, neither are Alex and Brett. I mean, they're brilliant, but there are tons of people out there like us, you know, and older adults may look at us young adults and say, well, you know, these are few and far between, these kids that are doing this stuff. And it's not true. You know, I think everyone has a potential to do this. It's just a matter of getting passionate about it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I honestly speak about that more now than even about slavery, about finding your specific passion and mm-hmm. doing something about that with God. Mm-hmm. And also that there's no wrong reason to serve the poor, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. What would you say, I mean, in your experience with like the church, big C, you know, mm-hmm. how do you kind of go and get the church revved up about this to say, you know, this younger generation has something that we can do, that we can be a viable part of?
Yeah. Well, I mean, 1 Timothy 4:12, let no one look down on you because you're young, but set an example for the believers in faith, in purity, and in good deeds. And in some translations, it even says for all the believers, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of us have younger brothers or sisters, and, you know, we're always told that we need to set a good example for them. But what this is basically saying is that since we're younger, we're actually supposed to be the ones to set the example for those who are older, which is, you know, completely turning things on their head, but that's what Jesus does, you know, he just flips things. And that's something I talk about a lot in church, because it's kind of a twofold message. First to the younger generation, to us, saying we have to be the ones to set an example. We need to show people how to be pure, how to be faithful, how to do good deeds. Mm-hmm. And to the older adults also, to not look down on us because we're young. You know, we have something to offer, but there has to be a measure of humility. Mm-hmm. And that also, you know, we can't just be like, the Bible says you have to listen to me, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not like that. That's not how it works. You know, it's a body.
Yeah. So where do you go from here then? Are you doing mm-hmm. additional schooling? Because it's kind of like, whoa, now you have this whole life and a ton mm-hmm. of responsibilities, and you're probably like, and there are other things I want to do too.
Yep. Definitely planning on going to college, mm-hmm. most likely a private Christian college. Mm-hmm. Probably this next year.
Okay.
So looking at that, and also, I mean, lots of writing projects in the loop right now, a lot of other projects, and just really exciting, more stuff that's potentially happening and happening than ever right now, right over the horizon.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Okay. So Zach, so people who are sitting and listening to this, and they know about the, you know, loose change, to loosen chains, mm-hmm. and they've got a bunch of change sitting around their house. What do they do? How are we going to gather up all our change? What's the practical way of getting this stuff to you?
Yeah. Well, I would recommend actually starting the campaign in a group, mm-hmm. so in a church, in a school, in some other kind of social group, because that way, you know, it's coming in mass, as opposed to, you know, one person getting $100 in change and mm-hmm. giving it. And basically, that can be done just like any other fundraiser. People thought Loose Change to Loosen Chains was innovative. It's just a glorified fundraiser, mm-hmm. you know? But first of all, basically with any issue, not just slavery, if you want to raise money and awareness, you need to learn stories, because stories connect with people on a much deeper level than just numbers and stats, you know? Mm-hmm. So learn the stories of people who've been impacted by the work that you're giving to. Mm-hmm. Tell those stories and then say, because of work, you know, of people, because of the work of people like us, these people are now walking free, or, you know, now they have clean water. Whatever the issue is. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a perfect place to start. And then just getting together, gathering the loose change. And we took it to the local bank, to those change counting machines, and broke it several times, actually, pouring all the change in. But
that's,
you know,
awesome.
Just logistics.
So what really, just as we wrap up here, what, Zach, really fires you up right now? I mean, do you have any modern day heroes? Do you mm-hmm. have any, when you just think about, you know, this is going to get me up tomorrow morning and get me passionate about what I'm doing? What does that look like?
Yeah, actually just passion mm-hmm. itself, which is something I talk a ton about, but and the difference between passion and interest. Basically, you know, passionate people have, since the beginning of time, been giving of themselves to a cause or to other people. And obviously the biggest example of that is Jesus, mm-hmm. you know? And that doesn't mean you necessarily have to die for something or for someone in order to be passionate, but basically art and culture and media have become disposable because of how much we have at such a high quantity, where we rarely even appreciate things anymore. But anyway, I would say everyone is interested in spirituality. Mm-hmm. Everyone's interested in a good cause because it's kind of the cool thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, most people aren't interested in religion, but they're at least interested in God and in spirituality. But how many interested people would you know someone who says, yeah, you know, I'm kind of looking into this Jesus guy. He seems interesting. How many of those people would you know that would actually die, that would actually take a bullet for this Jesus guy? Mm-hmm. You know, none of them. What does it take for somebody to give up their life or to give up even just time or money, you know, or years of their life for something? And the answer is it's passion. Basically, the difference between interest and passion is action. And that's kind of what drives me. That's definitely what drives me. It's passion. Basically, a desire to see this ended in my lifetime and to see other people drop this apathy and do something with their lives that will impact the world for the better, because that's the only way that the world will know that God is good.
Yeah. You know, it's sometimes I wonder if we're not more passionate about our iTunes playlist or the Lost finale or just this other nonsense that's going on than other things that bona fide, you know, could be changed or could actually affect people's lives. And that's why I love doing these interviews, because I love hearing people's individual passions and then through that getting not only interested but fired up about what God is doing in people and just specific things that are very much out there and things that people can hear about and say, you know what, that is something. I couldn't even put my finger on what it was that I was so frustrated with, or I was so upset about, or I was so excited about, and here it is. This is a great example of that. So, Zach, I think it's just fantastic. Everyone, you can find out more about Zach either through Facebook. Just find him on Facebook, Zach Hunter, or his website, which is zachhunter.me, zachhunter.me, and I think he's getting that back in the works and getting that back up again and stuff. So, you can find out about him, but also, check out the books. Again, they are Be the Change, Generation Change, and Lose Your Cool. And of course, his organization is Loose Change to Loosen Change. The cause and the goal is to abolish slavery. The many, many millions, 27, is it?
Correct? Yes,
people currently in slavery, which is, as he said on the front end of this interview, ridiculous. So let's get it done, people. Let's get excited. Let's be in prayer about it. I think worldwide, you know, the prayer of believers will get this ball rolling. So, Zach, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
For the Boundless Show.
Diadem adorns the mighty victor's brow, the mighty victor's brow. Through your death we have become children of the living one, and this triumph song is rising from the
Alright, folks, we're opening up this week's inbox, and I have Candace on the phone. Candace!
Hi, Lisa!
Hey! Did you get the hot bread out of the oven?
I can hear the buzzer going off, so hopefully someone's attending to it.
Well,
There is an adult down there, so it's not the three-year-old.
Put Teddy on it. Just throw some oven mitts on his hands and have him work on it. So.
Oh, my.
Okay, well, we've got a good question here, and you should know about this because it relates to pulling a Ruth. So,
All right, I'm ready.
You set the course for that. So
I'm
this is going
to pull a Ruth.
Apply it to a specific situation. This girl says she has a good guy friend. They met online, not a dating site. And she says he started chatting with me online quite a bit about 6 months ago, and we enjoy talking to each other a lot. However, I know that he talks to other girls as friends as well, so I've tried to be careful not to see him as more than a friend. We live a couple hundred miles apart, so we don't see each other often, but have spent time in person on a couple of occasions. Hanging out in person has made me even more drawn to him. This guy's a Christian. He's kind, smart, cares about others, has all the qualities I'd value in a husband. We're both in our mid to late 20s with steady jobs and similar Christian backgrounds. So her question is, she moves on to say, I need to figure out where I go from here. One option is to change nothing in the way I relate to him. I can simply keep chatting with him online for an hour every couple of days and email as appropriate. Another option is for me to significantly back off in the amount of time I talk to him. I'm hesitant to do so without some sort of explanation. I think if I suddenly stop spending time talking to him, he'll probably get the idea that I'm not interested in him as more than a friend, and that doesn't serve either of us well. I've toyed with the idea of being blunt and saying I have to spend less time talking to him because I've decided it's not wise to invest so much time. Especially when he hasn't expressed interest beyond friendship. Would that be appropriate, or should I give myself a set amount of time where I give many indications that I'm interested, and if he doesn't reciprocate, then back off?
I think this is a good question, and the online dimension is so prevalent now that I suspect a lot of listeners can relate to this.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a good way to get to know someone and, you know, to have the casual friendship develop. And obviously she's been able to get to know him well enough to know that she's interested in more. And so I think at the point where you start realizing, hey, I like this guy better than any of my other guy friends, and I want to talk to him more than any of my other guy friends, and when he doesn't text or IM me, I miss him. You know, when you start to have all those symptoms of falling for him,
mm-hmm.
that's the point where you need to get clarity in the relationship. And I agree that it's not good to just back off cold turkey because he'll probably think that she's mad at him, which she's not.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't think she should just keep going status quo, because if after all these many months of growing in intimacy and friendship, he hasn't clarified things, continuing that pattern will do nothing to motivate him to clarify things. So something needs to change. And what I would recommend is talking to him, preferably in person. If that's not possible, then I think on the phone. I think at some point you have to say, okay, we can only accomplish so much through email and messaging online. Schedule a phone date and let him know that you really do enjoy your time together, and you have found yourself moving beyond friendship emotionally, and just say, hey, where is this headed? What are your intentions? And
yeah.
Then just be quiet and let him answer.
Okay. So, and I think, I mean, I was telling Mott this before we started, I think we need to do a whole roundtable on this, because I was actually talking with my sisters about this, who are considerably older than I am. And they're like, there is like so much talking in and around relationships nowadays. Like women, you know, write these essays analyzing and parsing out everything that's been said. And
yeah.
Then guys, you know, then they go after the guys and they try to get clarity, and the guys are like, and they're all like,
right.
You know, playing innocent and stuff. And it's just like, it is true, you know, like women especially will get interested. And I always get back to the Not Your Buddy article where, you know, guys have it within their power to initiate something if they want to. And women kind of get in this vortex of weirdness where they're, you know, hanging back, then going forward, then back and forward. And I think it just makes it so, so convoluted. So
women just need to memorize the magic question. And I tend to think there aren't any silver bullets in life. But mm-hmm. in this case, I think this is the silver bullet.
Okay, and the question again is?
What are your intentions for me? What are your intentions for our friendship, for our relationship?
Now, how...
are your intentions? And then, this is the hard part. See, it's not that hard to ask the question. The hard part at that point is to be quiet and let him talk.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say anything. You've asked the question. It's on the table. If he feels uncomfortable, he needs to feel uncomfortable, and that's okay. Let him be the one then that is on the spot.
Okay. So I know, though, that we're going to get people write in and say, okay, well, that's if, for example, they met online and there's already that understanding that they're kind of getting to know one another. And it's, you know, not that it was a dating site, but there's kind of that understanding of we're talking one on one.
Right.
What about the guy paying special attention to a girl within a context of a group of friends or within a, I mean, does she just go? Because that's where I see a lot of the guys go, you know, what?
When the guy starts to treat her differently than the other women, and she will know this, at that point, she needs to say, hey, I noticed that you give me special attention or you spend more time with me. I see our friendship rising to a different level. What are your intentions?
Okay. Again, I'm a little bit frustrated that it is the women that have to step forward and say these things.
You know, but Lisa, someone could ask this question on her behalf, but my guess is she's not going to want to go that route because it feels too old-fashioned.
Yeah.
But by all means, if she's got a great relationship with her dad or a pastor or her best friend's husband, have a man ask him.
Yeah.
I think that's even a better scenario, because then when the guy doesn't know how to answer and you know, his lack of intentionality may come to the surface, the man can come alongside and say, hey, let me help you in this area. I've been there. I know how uncomfortable this is. Let me mentor you through this.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I would say, honestly, I mean, guys out there, if you're in the position where you're saying, I actually like texting her, I miss when we're not in contact, I whatever, then ask her out. You know, I mean, instead of, because women will, you know, women will be overanalyzing this, and do not let this go weeks or, you know, God forbid, months while you're asking your buddies or figuring out, you know, 10 years down the road, what would a marriage look like with this girl? And you're like overanalyzing it. I mean, just in the meantime, at least establish something and say, hey, just FYI, here's how I feel. And I'd like to get to know you, you know.
Yeah. And Lisa, I think the women, unfortunately, get themselves into this position of needing to ask the question because they let it go too long.
Yeah, yeah.
If the guy is not asking you out, don't treat him like a boyfriend.
Right.
If he's not expressing to you the kind of commitment, you know, to a one-on-one relationship, the kind of forthrightness that, hey, this is what I'm up to, then don't treat him like he is.
Exactly.
The first time he asks you out for coffee one-on-one, just say, hey, yeah, what will this mean?
Yeah, sure.
I think we just let it go too long.
Exactly. Well, and that's because, again, getting into the overanalysis, everyone, you know, will say, well, I think he really likes me. He did XYZ and he said XYZ, but, you know, it's not like he asked me out.
Right.
And then that's when all the friends come alongside. And again, I think of he's just not that into you. And all your friends are like, well, I'm sure it's just because he's shy, or I'm sure it's because
right.
he's trying to, you know.
Yeah, it's so embarrassing to think of doing this, but the first time he wants to do anything, just say, hey, is this a date?
Yeah.
Just ask, and he and if he says, "Oh no, we're just friends," say, "Well, I don't do just friends, just you and me one on one."
Right.
To me, that's a date. So if you know if that's what you want, great. But otherwise, no.
Right. Yeah, that's good. I think that gives some good guidelines. Listen up, ladies, and do it. So I think it will help. It will help everyone involved.
I'm saying this with a smile, people.
Yeah. Candace is smiling. And yeah. So anyway, pulling a Ruth, doing it long distance, doing it in a small group. Either way, I guess it has to be done. But guys, we would definitely appreciate it if we didn't get put in the position of having to constantly ask for clarity. Treat your sisters as sisters in Christ. If you're interested, then just flat out ask them out. Say something. Otherwise, you're just going to have 25 girlfriends talking about you, and that's not good either. So no guy wants that. So, well, thank you, Candace, very much for weighing in on that one. That was great.
You're welcome, Lisa.
Okay, that is it, folks, for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Write to us, give us your questions, and hope your summer is progressing nicely. I am Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.